Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Goal.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Bonds here. Another Baseball America playoff podcast. We are back a little later today. Sorry, we had a lot of work to do. So this podcast will be getting up just in time for you to listen to it before you dive into today's today's NLCS game. We got Padres Phillies today, off day as they travel in the American League. And as they travel to New York, which, by the way, does not have a roof, so good news for the Yankees after yesterday's roofs that apparently affected the game. But as they travel to New York, the Astros have a 2-0 lead, a somewhat commanding 2-0 lead in this. Last night, as you probably know as you listen to this, if you don't, spoiler alert, but the Astros won 3-2. But Jeff, I'll give you the overarching. What stood out about this game so far, or what stood out about this series so far to you most?
I just think it continues to be the Astros' ability to execute on both sides of the ball. A lot of strong defensive plays. Really across the board with the Astros. The pitching has been tremendous. And I think in the end, that's sort of been the difference in the series. We haven't seen Gerrit Cole go yet. For the Yankees, we've seen Severino. Who went in game one? I'm like totally drawing a blank. Jameson Taillon. Forgot.
Yeah. We haven't seen
their high end guys yet, but yeah. The thing is with the Astros is sort of 1 through 5, even 6, they can roll out arms that are probably number twos, I would say, in a majority of the teams in the major leagues, the highest budget, most competitive clubs. They have amassed a lot of arm talent that just sort of all blossomed around the same time. And they added it to an old core that already knows how to win. They just seem so difficult to defeat. Now, I felt like Yankees put up a fight last night. There was certainly an opportunity. Momentum swings in that game a little bit for sure. I thought in particular, double play made by Gleyber Torres, but the turn by Peraza at the back was just – his footwork on that play was tremendous. And I know we had been talking offline in separate conversations as we're working through our top 10s behind the scenes for all the readers and subscribers. We talked about Peraza's defense, and it was like a clear-cut version of how good he can be. Just a great player on the bag. That was one of the moments that sort of stuck out for me. Thought it was a momentum swing. They got that, the big swing from Judge. Doesn't leave the park. It was kind of a funny game in that sense, because you had, Alex Bregman's 3-run home run in the third was only hit a little bit over 90 miles per hour, but sort of to the right part of the park, and he just got it really flush. And Judge hits a ball. I don't know what the exit velocity was. I know it's out there.
111.7.
There you go. I knew it was going to be over 110. So 111 miles per hour. But this is the difference, between how balls move off of the bat. We can get into that maybe a little bit later.
I think that's what I want to start with this, which is there was a lot of talk of, how did that ball not get out? But Bregman's ball did get out. And Tom Tango Tiger on Twitter made a good point today about this, which I did want to kind of talk about a little bit, which is there's a quality of contact as far as how hard you hit a ball. But there's also a quality of contact depending on how squarely you hit a ball. And they seem like, I get it where someone may think that the two are incredibly closely related, but they're not necessarily, because you can hit a ball flush where you hit the ball and it goes out on a line. And we've all seen it if you've gone to games. And there are other balls that you can hit, and they have a fade, they have a slice. They, you know, if you've ever played golf, you know this. You can hit two balls, one harder than the other, but if you did it with a duck hook or a slice, it's going to be a different ball. And the ball Aaron Judge hit, Jeff, it had a slice, didn't it? Like, I mean, that's to answer the question of how does an 111 mile an hour exit velo knock it out? That's what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not all that unusual. If you've watched Judge a bit throughout his career, he's got great opposite field power. But I think we can also agree that there's a lot of balls that are hit to the opposite field that are just frankly mishits that are maybe struck well. I think that's kind of what it was. It was a matter of, you know, how flush his barrel was, kind of the angle and the position of the barrel, even beyond sort of launch, just how the face opens up. If you've swung a bat, you kind of know how this happens from time to time. Versus Bregman. And I think like Alex Bregman is one of the guys in baseball that's best at this. Altuve is actually another one, funny enough, in the same team. Joey Votto is a guy that's like this, where I've always felt that the distance on their fly balls, the distance on their home runs, consistently seems to sort of outperform exit velocity, strength, all that sort of thing. And, you know, sort of the old school explanation for this is that you backspun the ball. And I think that that's true. I think if you want to go even a level deeper, there's a level of backspin and backspin efficiency. You know, I know that Swing Graphs, they, you know, the gentleman that that actually runs that that account actually written a little bit about this. He wrote a book about it called Quantitative Hitting that I read. And he had sort of measured some of this sort of batted ball spin. And really what it came down to was sort of spin direction. And the thing that he looked at was there was a range of backspin that's really efficient where the ball travels further. It outperforms its distance versus other backspin that maybe is a higher spin rate that underperforms its backspin. So, you know, I think when you look at somebody like Bregman, he just has an innate ability to sort of get the most out of his backspin, which I think is, you know, what's sort of unusual about him and why at times it sort of doesn't make sense. He also isn't a perfect park where the Crawford box is there in terms of like wall height and distance and all that sort of stuff for a lot of those home runs. But skill wise, I mean, he hits balls on the inner half to his pull side as well as anybody in baseball.
So we have some fun stuff that we get to be able to look at, which is like side views and all. And like, if you look at where Aaron Judge made contact with it, which is not shocking. If you see that it was an opposite field, the ball was deep. And so, you know, obviously it's really hard to hit a ball oppo where you got really out in front. Obviously that's where you pull. But the thing that also stands out with it, and it's not a 240 FPS or better view of it. You barely see the bat as you look at it, but it is something that stands out. It's again, that what you're talking about. It's if you just get a little bit less than flush. And this is why hitting is so amazing and hitting is so hard, is that he hit, but also just talks to Judge's strength, that he was able to hit the ball that hard, that far to the opposite field without really squaring the ball up either. There's not a whole lot of players in baseball who could have hit the ball like he did to where he did in the park with that. By the way, on that play, again, this is the small margins that these things end up on. Tucker made that play look kind of easy.
Yeah.
But it's not hard to imagine a different scenario where the outfielder just gets a little bit frazzled by the wall there. Home field advantage also helps there, that sure, you're at your home park. But all of a sudden, the game changes on that play.
Yeah, and timing it up even, you know, guys will get on it and not necessarily make the play. We saw that in a game a couple of weeks ago on an inside, or last weekend on an inside the park home run, where a really good center fielder just happened to, you know, had a good beat in the ball and just sort of misplayed it. And you have to think like how difficult it is, just like making a jumping catch in the end zone and controlling your body well enough that you're able to focus, make the catch, time that out, right, with the hand-eye coordination, mm-hmm. and then physically put yourself in a position to be at the ball at the right time as it sort of crosses your catch radius, right? So kudos to Tucker. And as you said, he made it look fairly effortless. And I thought that was funny because it was an inning right after the great play by Glaber on that turn at second. And it was like, all right, like that to me was kind of what I came away with, even more than the batted balls. It was those two great defensive plays and how differently the game could have been, you know?
It really was a game that could have, I mean, it was close. And by the way, on that play also at the time, Harrison Bader tagged up on that play, made it to second. It did not end up, you know, mattering, but at the same time, it was a very heads up play, especially because it would have been very easy to have kind of blown the read, which is, oh, I think it's going to go out. And so I don't need to worry about being standing on the bag, which he was standing on that bag ready to go. And it still was a bang bang play at second. So if he'd have done anything other than that, he'd have been in trouble. But what we really want to be talking about is Framber Valdez and how impressive Framber Valdez was in that game. And we're going to do that right after a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Jeff, Framber Valdez in this game, the thing that I would say is you talked about the Astros pitching, and it really is true that I don't think that there is they have Justin Verlander, who's literally one of the best pitchers of the 21st century. I think an easy Hall of Famer, who's still at the top of his game, who led the league in ERA this year. And the drop off from having him go game one to Framber Valdez is almost infinitesimal, feels like right now, which says something for the Astros. The thing that we keep seeing in this series so far, over and over, is the Astros pitchers are generating swings and misses that the Yankees pitchers just are not able to. And what we saw in this game was Framber Valdez's curveball was generating. He threw 24 curveballs, 15 swings and misses out of 24 curveballs, 63% whiff percentage. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. But what is it? You love to dive into pitch data. What is it about Framber Valdez? What is it that makes him so effective?
You know, I think it's a few things. And, you know, first off, he's got secondaries that miss bats. And he's got a fairly hard sinker. I wouldn't call it a turbo sinker. I don't know if you think it's in that range. But a hard sinker that gets... And it's a true sinker that gets a ton of ground balls. You know, overall, if we're looking at, you know, ground ball rate, you know, he's got a two seamer sinker that gets a 70% ground ball rate. And then he's got three other pitches that are 60% or above in terms of his secondary. So he controls contact at an elite rate, allows, you know, the fielders behind him to make plays. Against a team like the Yankees, that's incredibly effective if you're able to keep the ball on the ground, suppress hard contact a little bit, particularly in the air, because they do so much damage via the home run. Then when you mix in the fact that he throws a fairly hard curveball with really dynamic two-plane movement, I mean, you're talking about, you know, nearly on average negative 16 to negative 17 inches of induced vertical break with 12 inches of sweep. When you have double digit numbers on your negative, you know, induced vertical break and your horizontal break, typically those are the pitches that correlate most directly with swings and misses. It's a harder curveball that it sits, you know, that 78 to, you know, 80 miles per hour. With that kind of movement is just rare. It's an incredibly high spin pitch, 2800 to 2900 RPMs on average. He mixes in a slider that's a little bit tighter, a little bit harder. So just a different look that he can give, that has a little bit less depth, both, vertically and horizontally. And then he's got a decent changeup too that he kills lift on. And when you're a two-seam guy like this, typically you have the ability to do that, to kill lift and get it, get balls to move. So, I think there's obviously some other stuff with spin direction and, the seam shifted wake and that sort of thing that are going on here. I'm not a physicist. I'm not going to dive into that. But there is, some elements to his pitches, sort of because of the non-efficiency that allow him to generate this movement and this power. And he lands everything for strikes at a pretty high rate. So when you're going against a guy that even when you make contact, it's not going to be great contact. He's throwing strikes consistently and challenging you, and then has three different pitch shapes that he can miss bats with. That's pretty dangerous.
You hit on it. Like when you say about ability to throw strikes. Okay, so his strike rate with his fastball yesterday was over 80%. He threw 45 fastballs in the game. 37 of them were strikes. Let's just start with, as a hitter, you're in real trouble right now, because that's, I focused probably too much on strike rates, but if you're over 70, like it's really good. Over 80, you don't even see on the pitch very often. But then on top of that, he threw 40 curveballs and 26 of them were strikes.
Yeah.
On a day where he's throwing his fastball for strikes like that, by the way, sitting 95, touching 97, and he's landing his curveball, which, by the way, when I say he landed his curveball 65% of the time to strikes, there's at least a few of those that he wasn't necessarily trying to throw for strikes. So, like, he's commanding those two pitches, and then you throw on that he at least keeps you worrying about a changeup as well and a slider. I mean, it's cutterish slider. It's just a very difficult combination to face the hitter. But on top of that, the other thing I like about him is that we are in an era now where we see a lot of batters, pitchers, that I understand why, but like they're all power, right? It's power, 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 power. The other thing that curveball gives him is the difference in velocity between that curveball and his fastball is significant enough that you have now also, it's really, if fastball slider, if you see a guy who's throwing high 90s with a low 90 slider and that's what he throws, it's not an easy task, but at least you are geared up for velocity and you know you're going to face it. It's either going to be really hard or it's going to be hard. With Valdez, sometimes you just lock up because you're geared up for fastball, and then all of a sudden you've got a pitch that's coming in 15 miles an hour slower. That's adding that velocity range that's got to be difficult for a hitter as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and I think, you're looking at almost like four different velocity bands that he's working in with this entire pitch arsenal. And, when I talk to pitching coaches and guys who are, training pitchers and, working on pitch development for younger players, a lot of it is, this guy has a pretty decent four seamer. We know we can, fix that. It's just a matter of having power and strength or whatever. He can spin it, or he's got a good changeup. Maybe has, semblance of three pitches. And sometimes it's like adding that cutter or that two seamer or whatever that's sort of in between. And, I think with Framber, the fact that he's like got that pitch in that 92 to like 95 range, something else with his changeup that's in that 87 to like 89, 90 range, then that 82 to 83, 84, 85 range with a slider, and then the curveball, which is 77 to 82. It's like, you have four velocity bands and different movement patterns that you got to pick up. And, it's not necessarily easy to do so.
Yeah. It is a difficult task. That said, the Astros have a whole lot of pitchers who are difficult tasks. So Christian Javier, it looks like, will be facing Gerrit Cole in Game 3, scheduled for tomorrow, Saturday, October 22nd. That's one game where I will say, okay, advantage Yankees, but it's still, when I say advantage Yankees, it's not Christian Javier is a guy who can really give you good innings. But I do think like that's to describe that as must win is probably not even doing it justice for the Yankees, because you do have a little bit of a favorable matchup. It is your first game back home at Yankee Stadium. But on top of that, you know you're going to face Verlander. You know you're going to face Framber Valdez again in this series. And with that being the case, I would not want to face those two guys knowing you got to win both of those. And on top of that, getting that win against Javier at least means that you could, you know, you could end up losing one of those games and still winning the series. So yeah. I guess you can lose one of them. You can't lose two, but you can lose one. But it will be fun to watch. Will be fun to watch today. We have Padres versus Phillies, Joe Musgrove versus Ranger Suarez. Before we wrap up, Jeff, anything that you are looking for in particular in that game?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, you're going to have to deal with the Philly crowd. Musgrove's going to have to certainly deal with that. You know, he's gone into hostile environments before and pitched well. He's had two signature games already in the playoffs. Can he keep that going? He's pitching as well as pretty much anybody over the last few months. And then, you know, how good of a game can the Phillies get out of Ranger Suarez? If he can keep this close, this Phillies lineup is just so incredibly dangerous that as well as the Padres bullpen has pitched, if they can get to that bullpen, they can do damage. That's not to say that the Padres can't, but I think, you know, first LCS game in Philadelphia in a long time, fans are going to be geared up. It's a Friday night. You know, it's going to be a lot of energy in that stadium, and it's a tough place to play. And it's a good team. I bet against Philly too much in the first couple of rounds. Don't want to bet against them again. But I do think that, you know, Padres obviously need to take a game here in Philadelphia to, you know, get control of the series. So this is a pretty pivotal game three.
It is a pivotal game three. Been looking forward to it. Got a lot of baseball this weekend. We'll be watching. We'll break down. We'll be back on Monday to break it all down. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.